I didn't get on a scooter today, but I'll look forward to racing any governor of any state or province in Canada any day. Bring it on.
Welcome to GeekWire, everybody. I'm GeekWire editor Todd Bishop. Our guest on this special edition of the podcast, Washington State Governor Jay Inslee. This week, we hosted more than 800 members of the Seattle area tech community at the GeekWire Gala. That's our annual holiday event, and it was held this year at the Showbox in Seattle. Before the festivities kicked off, we held a special reception and interview with Governor Inslee. He spoke with GeekWire civic editor Monica Nicholsberg and me, and we talked about everything from his presidential ambitions to regulating big tech to lessons learned from Amazon's HQ2 search. We're going to play the interview for you here in its entirety.
Governor Jay Inslee. Well, Governor Inslee, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you. Closest thing I've come to being a geek my whole life. This is awesome.
I think you could be a secret geek.
Well, a secret geek. There you go.
We'll
undercover geek.
So, yes, thank you so much for being here, Governor. We're sitting here in this historic music venue that's hosted everyone from Duke Ellington to Pearl Jam. But as you know, the Showbox is slated for the Wrecking Ball. It's kind of emblematic of broader themes that we see in this state. And I'm curious, how do you think we should balance growth and change with progress? And how do you think about moving forward in innovation while keeping in mind what makes this state great?
Well, since I'm sitting here, I would say I'm unalterably in favor of progress and saving the Showbox. How's that? So we'd like to do both. I know what this means to the hearts of a lot of people, and I hope something works out here for the community. That's what I can say about this particular venue. What I would say is, look, I've got a bias for innovation. I've got a bias for transformation. I've got a bias for progress in all things because that's exciting. I just came from the Lime Bike Center, where today we celebrated the 2 millionth ride on a Lime bike and scooter. Pretty exciting in Seattle. And the reason I mention Lime is because it's such a perfect example of the kind of thing we've embraced, which is software, new battery technology, and a creative way to get people to have a whole new experience. You've got to be in favor of that. That's kind of what makes life worth living, is that positive change. So the best way I can say it is we've got to think forward, because we understand that if we don't look forward, we're not going to be able to hold on what we have. If we don't decarbonize our economy and progress to a decarbonized economy with clean energy, we won't be able to hold on to our old artifacts of forests and salmon and snow to ski on. So in my mind, progress is not only, it doesn't contest clinging to what you value, it protects to what you value, and we're doing that right here in the state of Washington. How's that for a philosophic answer?
That's good. I have an easy follow-up question. Did you ride one of the scooters?
I didn't get on a scooter today, but I'll look forward to racing any governor of any state or province in Canada any day. Bring it on. I do ride bikes a lot, every chance I get, and I love it. And when I was talking to Lime, I said, Lime bikes and scooters are time machines, because when you're on a Lime bike, you're 10 years of age. I've never seen anybody riding a bike that's not smiling, so I'm a real believer.
So, Governor Inslee, we just got done talking with Steve Ballmer. We just launched our new Numbers Geek podcast this week, trying to bring facts and data to the world of government and politics.
Well, don't try to bring it to Washington, D.C., I'll tell you that.
Well, we can talk about that. If you, when you think about the future of the country and the world, are there specific numbers that you think about, that you track, that you watch and you would hope would be something different in the future, or that you basically would hope would be more on the minds of people as they think about the future of the world?
Well, I would pick the number one. And the reason is when I think about this, that's the most important number, because it's the ranking that Washington was given by Business Insider magazine as where the best place to do business is in the United States. We're number one. I would pick the number one because it is the ranking that Oxfam gave the state of Washington as where the best place to work is in the United States, we are number one. I picked number one because that is the ranking of our paid family leave policy. We are number one. I'd say we're number one because I would say number one because we are the first state in the United States to protect net neutrality so that we can have a functioning internet. And we are the first one in the United States. Now, that's just a few of our number ones, so I'll pick number one. We seem to be in a lot of categories. And I'm proud of our state because we've done that, because not only are we lucky to have this incredible entrepreneurial talent, but we've also embraced policies that help those number ones happen, of focusing on development of intellectual talent, focusing on connectivity, focusing on innovation policies. This didn't happen by accident. So how was it number one? I'm sticking with number one.
So clearly that is an important message for people here in the state, and obviously that's a message that you would want the rest of the nation to hear as they think about your leadership here. What about the country and the world more broadly? Are there numbers that you track related to the environment or the economy or other key issues that you follow? Are there other sort of key performance indicator type numbers that you follow?
I think the number that is most important and most challenging is 350. Because if we had a world that had 350 parts per million of carbon dioxide, my grandchildren would have a chance to have Washington the way I grew up with. And I grew up with a Washington where the forests weren't catching fire and putting ash on the hoods of our cars like happened this summer. I grew up in a Washington where there were salmon in the rivers to fish for and orca to survive. I grew up in a Washington where we could ski in the winter. And if we maintained about 350 parts per million in our atmosphere, my grandchildren would have a shot of having those things during their life. Unfortunately, we're going over 400 parts per million. That means my grandchildren will fundamentally have a degraded Washington state. So that number is striking a lot of more than concern, but absolute terror in all of us parents and grandparents that we have to do something about climate change. Now, here's the other good number, the number two. And here's on the upside. We are growing clean energy jobs twice as fast as the growth of jobs in the rest of the economy. Twice as fast. Solar energy jobs are growing, you know, dozens of times faster than in the coal industry. Wind energy jobs are growing dozens of times faster than in the fossil fuel industry. So the number two works pretty well, too, that we can grow our economy by adopting an aspirational, innovative model to grow jobs here and grow our economy. So those are the two numbers that I think are internationally most important.
So, Governor, climate change is obviously an issue that you're very passionate about. Will it be the center of your 2020 presidential campaign?
That's called getting the cart a little ahead of the horse. I do think, I do believe this. I believe in 2020, this is kind of our last chance. You know, there's some things you can do 10 years from now, or you can do it 20 years from now, or you can do it 50 years from now. We don't get any do-overs on this. The world is either going to embrace this challenge and face it, and America's going to lead it, or we won't get another chance in succeeding decades. So I do believe that in 2020... we need to make that race a referendum on climate change. We have to create the politics that give America a choice of a chief executive that will call America to the better angels of its nature. We will do for clean energy what John F. Kennedy did for space. He said we're going to the moon, and we went. I do believe we need a leader of this nation to call this nation to what we do so well, which is to innovate and create and build. And I believe if we have a leader like that, we are going to do that. So you're a little ahead of me on that score, but I know we got to have that kind of leadership.
Am I ahead of you, though? Because you did form a political action committee to raise money and explore other opportunities other than running for governor.
Yes, I am doing a really good job testing the waters. And you are really doing a great job giving me softball setup questions. Bless you. I appreciate that.
All right. Well, how about a hardball? Are you running for president or not?
Yeah, hold the phone on that.
So
I will give you an honest answer. I'm seriously thinking about this. And I do believe that were I to get into the race, and I'm not a candidate tonight. It's important for me to say that. But I do believe that we have a story to tell the rest of the country of what I call the Washington way. And that is, we have developed the number one economy in the United States because we have adopted progressive policies that have a middle-out system of economic development. Not top-down, middle-out. That's based on innovation. That's based on respecting middle-class workers. That's based on a concept that everyone should have a shot. And because of those policies, we've built the best economy in the United States. And we have shown that we can create jobs in this clean energy space. So I do think there is a story from Washington that one could share with America. And we'll see. I hope some candidate does that.
So this issue of climate change is so interesting because it illustrates, in a nutshell, the fundamental challenge of our country right now. And that is, we can't even agree as a nation that there's a problem, let alone talk about the potential solution. How do you rally people around that issue as a candidate or as a leader in a way that gets you into higher office on the national level and puts you in a position to solve that problem if a substantial portion of the population doesn't even agree that it's a problem?
Well, the first thing we do is remove Donald Trump from public life. That is the first thing we have to do. I just got to make this clear. But look, I believe that this issue, in its most fundamental character and its solution set, is really tied to basic American character and values. You asked me about numbers. The numbers are really not what's important here. What is important is our ability to recognize that the solution to this problem is uniquely American. If we simply do what we do in America so well, we innovate, we create, we build, we lead the world, we don't follow it. And embracing those basic American character values are the salvation for all future generations. So in my view, this is more about the fundamental American character and the Washington State story than it is about any of those numbers that we talked about. And it is my belief that when you ask the American people to accept the challenge and they become unified to do that, we can move the world. We defeated fascism. We went to the moon. We can beat climate change. And I fundamentally believe that.
That is Washington State Governor Jay Inslee, and we'll have more after this break.
I wanted a career in IT, but I didn't know where to start. WGU makes it simple. Their accredited online degree programs cover all kinds of IT specialties, and they have valuable industry certifications built in at no extra cost. The payoff? Having those certs back up my degree makes me look even better to future employers. A nonprofit university that includes top industry certs in their programs? I choose WGU. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
Welcome back. Let's rejoin our interview with Washington State Governor Jay Inslee.
You mentioned Washington as a leader in innovation and that really powering our economy and job growth. But when you think more broadly about the next wave of innovations, particularly artificial intelligence and automation, how do we balance that progress with the massive job loss that's predicted?
Well, I think you have to recognize that I believe this period of transition will be as faster than any other period of industrial transition that we've had. That means that we have to increase our commitment to giving people an opportunity to explore their intellectual capabilities. And that means whole new ways of education and job training. Now, fortunately, we're doing that in Washington State. We lead the country in many ways. One of the ways we're leading the country is creating whole new ways of training and job skills development in our state. I'm proud that our state is the first state in the United States to have an apprenticeship program for computer coding. And we now have had the second generation of doing that. I'm proud that our state is leading the United States in what we call career-connected learning. And that means that we believe what young people have in Switzerland, they ought to have in the state of Washington. 70% of the 17 and 18-year-olds in Switzerland have access to an apprenticeship program in computer coding, in electronic technician programs, in healthcare programs. They have the ability to have paid apprenticeships programs essentially while they're in high school. We believe Washington kids should have that same opportunity, and we're building an infrastructure to do that. And by the way, I hope people in this audience will be engaged in this effort, because this has to be led by business leaders. This has to be designed by business leaders, and I hope you will help us make that happen. This is very exciting.
So we reached a milestone today that's extremely fascinating. Microsoft and Amazon are the top two publicly traded companies, not just tech companies, but by market value. And yet the past year has been just fraught with an illustration after illustration of the peril of these companies, most of them admittedly in Silicon Valley, but still there are privacy issues, regulatory issues facing Microsoft, Amazon, and others. How should you regulate these companies and make sure they don't get so big that they're basically controlling our lives in a way that we might not even understand?
Very wisely. How's that for an answer? Let me just take this one issue of privacy issue. We, I think, are well positioned to develop one of the better privacy policies that allows innovation to continue while responding to citizens' basic instincts for privacy. So we've started those discussions right now with our tech leaders in our state about a privacy policy that is consistent with innovation and also consistent with fundamental rights and privacy. And I actually am pretty confident we're going to get a policy probably in this session that will be pleasing to innovators and consumers. We've got a good step on that. We had our second meeting with tech leaders about this and consumer advocates. And basically, the fundamentals are that make sure you understand the real impact of any regulatory environment on innovators. Make sure you understand that when you do the regulation. Make sure you give time for the innovative industries to participate that, so it isn't a 24-hour slapdash thing that people haven't understood the consequences. And I believe we're in a good position to actually do that this year.
Does it make sense for big tech to be regulated at the state level? Because the internet doesn't respect state boundaries.
It would be better to have national approaches to these. However, we have learned that if you're waiting for progress from inside the Beltway right now, you probably will retire before you get it. And it's just unfortunately has been a dysfunctional place in our democracy. And in so many actions, what we have learned is, if we're going to make progress, we have to seize our own destiny. You look at transportation infrastructure. We've built the biggest transportation infrastructure plan in state's history. They can't build a birdhouse in Washington, D.C. We're moving forward on privacy. They have been hamstrung to have any progress on that. They've been trying to dismantle our healthcare system that now has provided health insurance for hundreds of thousands of people. So I think you have to recognize, yes, it would be preferable to have a more unified national strategy. But in the absence of that, we just can't wait. Our people need protection now.
So the last year was marked in part by the Amazon HQ2 search, which did not end the way many people thought it would, but yet in many ways was a wake-up call for people in the Seattle region and the state. What did you learn about Washington State through the course of Amazon's HQ2 search, and what should we be doing differently because a company like Amazon decided to look elsewhere?
Well, as governor of Washington, I can tell you I'm pleased. What I learned is it takes two whole states to do what we can do just here in one state, in the state of Washington. So I'm proud of that achievement. I said sardonically, or anyway. What I've learned is that there are some, to some degree, limits of growth in one particular location. Look, this is a company that has enjoyed growth unprecedented in human history, and that's just a fact. And frankly, I have not been shocked that the limits of geography and the need to be able to recruit talent from multiple pools, frankly, it just has not been shocking to anyone who understands economics and the need to recruit talent that a particularly spectacularly successful company would want to broaden their base of to some degree. I just don't, that is not shocking to me. I've been pleased that Amazon is continuing their growth here. When you actually look what has actually happened, I believe that as the dust has settled, we remain very bullish on their participation as a leading company here, and I feel very confident, and I'm very pleased by that.
What's your call to action for this group of business and technology leaders? What would you tell them that they should go out there and do to change things in line with your broader vision for the state?
Well, it's a bit of what I say almost every group is that I would encourage you to become active in helping us make good decisions in our democratic system. And that is a request because you're very busy building companies. You're building the next incredible next mousetrap. But I hope you take a little bit of time to share your vision for our state with our elected leaders. We need to hear from you. You need to have relationships with legislators and city council people. Those relationships are important to make sure we make good decisions. And I know you're really, really busy, but we need your expertise. We also need you to be electorally active. No matter what your persuasion is, I encourage people to be electorally active. Look, this is how we make decisions. We get the people who share our vision statement to get elected. So I encourage that no matter what party you are or what your vision statement is, we need you.
Last question, Governor. When you look beyond our state, what's your vision for the future of the country?
Look, I think that I really believe in the fundamental uniqueness of America. I believe America is the indispensable country for the world, not just our own nation. The world has to have the leadership of America fundamentally to defeat climate change. The world fundamentally looks to us for the preservation of tolerance and decency and democracy. We are the anchor of hope for the world. We have to realize that. And I hope that the country shortly will restore that bright light of the Statue of Liberty that shines so brightly that is such an inspiration to the world. And I believe that we can do that, and I believe we will do that shortly. That's why I jumped out against the Muslim ban so quickly. It's why I've spoken about clean energy, and it's why I've spoken about believing that America is going to become the indispensable nation once again with your help. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Governor Inslee.
Big round of applause for Governor Jay Inslee.
That was our interview on Thursday, December 6th, with Washington State Governor Jay Inslee at the Showbox in Seattle. For more news, podcasts, videos, and information about upcoming events, go to geekwire.com. Also, be sure to check out our new podcast, Numbers Geek with Steve Ballmer. You can find more at geekwire.com/numbersgeek. Until next time, I'm Todd Bishop. Thanks for listening to GeekWire.